Welcome to San Diego Magazine's Happy Half Hour. This is our 101st episode. We are taping again from the Hornblower. If you listened to our 100th episode, we had a great party. We picked our top. What did we do? A draft? Restaurant draft?
Oh, we did our fantasy restaurant draft.
I know.
We know now who is going to win. We have a good idea who's going to win the best team.
And who is that,
roster.
Troy?
That's going to be Troy Johnson.
Just checking.
We have a great show for you. You guys, we always start out with hot plates, talking about new restaurants that are opening around town. We're going to hear from our sponsor, Hornblower. We're thrilled that they're sponsoring us again. And we have one of my favorite guests that we've ever had so far. We have Peter Halmay, a 40-year veteran of the fishing community here in San Diego, to talk all about fishing and uni and just a really, really interesting, great guy. So make sure you stay tuned for that. Okay, Archie, why don't you start us off with hot plates?
So there's a new restaurant in the Gaslamp. It's called Tocaya Organica. So it's a concept actually that comes from L.A., and they're all about Mexican food with good ingredients, organic, locally sourced. And it just opened on Fifth Avenue downtown. It's a two-story space, 6,000 square feet, a small, intimate space.
And I love the fact that they're focusing on Mexican food and making it a little bit healthier. There's a great a local garden in National City called Olivewood Gardens that has a Mexican food healthification program, taking some of those great Mexican traditional San Diego dishes, you know, and making them a little bit healthier for the community. And that's the same thing that these guys are doing.
Yep. Awesome. And then how about the patio?
The patio 101 is now open in Encinitas. They did the patio on Lamont, the patio on Goldfinch, and it's the space in Encinitas that was once occupied by Open House Food and Drink, which I actually didn't even realize closed, but that was open for about a year or so.
Open House, which is Wade Hegeman, who is one of the better chefs in town, and he has Blue Ribbon Artisanal Pizzeria. He was a four-star chef at Blanca, your old school San Diegan.
Yeah.
And I'm sad to see his restaurant close, but this place by the patio, is a great restaurant operator. 7,000 square feet.
Whoa.
That is
That's not huge.
A small restaurant.
And it's that indoor-outdoor style, very pet-friendly.
Yeah.
There's two bars. It's going to... North County. I feel like there's more and more North County hot plates with every episode that we do.
Rip is Van Winkling. Yes, it's a waking up.
And now, Archie, in your neighborhood in Hillcrest, there's a new poke spot.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Poke It or Poke It, but it's now open in Hillcrest in that Ralph's Trader Joe's shopping center. It's a Baja-inspired take on poke. So you're going to get, like, sushi rice fried that's to make these rice tatas, quote-unquote, and then they have salmon skin chicharrones, so...
So Mexican meets Hawaiian.
Yes, Mexico meets Hawaii.
Okay, and then Chula Vista. Well, we're just spanning the entire county today on Hot Plates.
I know, we're jumping
all over
the place.
What's happening in Chula Vista?
Temp has closed. We had Chef Steve Brown on the podcast previously. Sounded like a really, really cool restaurant. I never made it there myself, but they were known for their Wagyu steak dinners. They had boozy brunches. And it was about nearly a year that it was open. So
yeah, Steve Brown is the chef that's opening up a bunch. He's going to be opening up a spot in Imperial Beach. He's opening up a spot in Barrio, Logan. You know, he's a really good chef, but Chula Vista is a hard market, too. We've seen a lot of restaurants close there. It has a lot of, like, affluent Spanish-American or Mexican-American community. Hopefully, they can actually hold a restaurant up after this.
And I'd like to tap that the August issue has a Chula Vista neighborhood guide that I wrote. So
Check it out. Read it.
Okay. And then lastly, we're just about done with hot plates. Tell us about a new ramen spot.
In Oceanside, we're really like going all over the place today. So Ramen Menma Basso Drillman, say that five times fast, is now open in Oceanside. And it's run by a really famous ramen chef from Japan. He has a bunch of ramen eateries in Japan. So pretty awesome for Oceanside. I mean, Troy, you did that whole story on Oceanside and, you know, DJ Mara to get these big chefs to come to San Diego. And, hey, they're going to open up in Oceanside.
It's a cool spot. San Diego is splitting in two because the 805-5 merged. And for a long time, it was all focused down here near Little Italy and downtown and North Park and South Park and everything else. And now Carlsbad and Oceanside and everything else is waking
Oceanside's
up.
Really kind of amazing. Okay, you guys, that's Hot Plates. Make sure you check your San Diego magazines because Archana has a Hot Plates column every single month. And then check SanDiegoMagazine.com because Troy keeps a blog there with all this kind of stuff in it. All right, we're thrilled to have our Captain Ernesto Coleman with Hornblower with us. You are the Captain and Safety and Occupational Health Coordinator at Hornblower Cruises and Events. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me here.
It's been such a fun cruise. So your mother's on board today.
Yes, my mother is visiting from Mobile, Alabama, with my father, and my beautiful wife is here as well.
So fun.
How long have you been a boat captain, man?
I've been a captain for 26 years.
Wow. No way.
Yes, I might not even look that old, but
you don't. You don't. I mean, my next question is about your skin cream, but, you know.
What's the secret to all this? I'll tell you in a little bit.
Probably eating a lot of uni.
In San Diego, or where have you seen?
So I've been all over the world. Actually, I've only been in San Diego for 3 years.
Okay.
So I grew up in Connecticut, moved down to Mobile, Alabama, and then I worked in the Gulf of Mexico and lived in New Orleans. So I've been to Panama, Dominican, Puerto Rico, St. Eustatia, St. John, St. Thomas, St. Martin.
And what do you like about San Diego's Bay, man? I mean, you take this cruise every single day on Hornblower. What do you like about this bay?
Well, it's the background of the city, because also I'm a captain and I run the San Francisco Bell in San Francisco. And the view here is nothing like any city that I've been in anywhere. Driving around here in the Bay is just an amazing thing. And that's what I enjoy about my job in general, is allowing people to see what the city looks like.
And has anything exciting ever happened to you while you're driving the boat?
Well, it's several things that has happened. So I can tell you, in the last couple of weeks, I was in San Francisco and I was a part of the Escape from Alcatraz. That's when we have 2,000 triathletes jumping off the side of the vessel about 600 feet away from Alcatraz.
They're jumping off a Hornblower?
Yes, and that boat holds 2,000 people, so it's bigger than, it's the largest passenger vessel on the West Coast. So you have 2,000 people jumping in the water, and they have to swim a mile and a half, ride a bike 18 miles, and run 8 miles. So I was a part of that, and it's very exciting to see that. So Hornblower, we do a lot of things. So that was one of the things that's exciting.
So cool. We got to bring that to San Diego. And then tell me about just making your customers happy on Hornblower. We've been on the boat for a couple of hours now. We're pulling back into port, and everyone is really enjoying themselves. Tell me about what goes into that.
So for me, I learned this when I met you earlier. My grandfather, he lived to 115. He said, every day is a great day.
Pardon me, sir? Your grandfather lived to 115?
He was 115, and he was just tired. He wasn't sick. He wasn't sick. So
I'm sorry, get back to your story. I was just flabbergasted.
Yeah. So, you know, he told me, don't worry about things that you cannot change. And you never know what people are going through. So when I greet people, I want people to feel that I'm engaged with them and want them to enjoy and to create an amazing experience for them. So to me, it's about the people. That's why I love my job. Out of all the jobs I've had in my 26 years working here at Hornblower, I get to do that. And if I can at least make one person happy, I feel I've accomplished that for the day.
So great. Well, you've definitely made all of us happy hosting us for our 100th and 101st episodes of our Happy Half Hour podcast. So we thank you all
thank
for
you.
Your hospitality. It's been awesome.
Oh, well, thank you
thank
so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Now, will you park the boat, please?
Yes, I will. Oh, we're going back up so I can back the boat.
Literally, we're like, we're getting very close to land.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys.
Run away. Okay, we are thrilled to have our special guest here on our 101st Happy Half Hour podcast episode. We have Peter Halme, a legendary San Diego fisherman, with us on the Hornblower boat today. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Is it weird being on a boat, sir?
I haven't been on a boat in about an hour, so. I got in at 4:30, walked over and got back on the boat.
Will you talk to me about your, I mean, so people, actually, you, Aaron, will you please explain his background?
Well, so you've been a fisherman in San Diego for how many years?
I moved to San Diego in 75, and I was fishing out of Catalina since 1970.
And we wrote a great story about you in San Diego Magazine. You came to fame for diving for uni, right, in San Diego?
Yes, we established the sea urchin fishery down here. In 1975, it was a pest, and the kelp harvesters were dumping quicklime and killing them by the millions. And we discovered there's a market in Japan. And all sea urchin was shipped to Japan in the 70s. And only around the mid-80s, late 80s, did we start consuming sea urchins here in, domestically.
Now, when you were first fishing for them, you were saying they were pests. Now, sea urchin, as we all know now, is one of the most, you know, biggest delicacies of the West Coast. San Diego, Santa Barbara, you know, are some of the havens for it. But when you were first pulling them up, And there, you said mid-60s, right, when you first started?
No, mid-70s.
Mid-70s. When you were first pulling them up in the mid-70s, what were people thinking when you were trying to get them to eat them? What were they saying?
Never mind the people trying to get them to eat them. We had no idea how you would eat them. We were abalone divers. We kept turning it over and looking for the foot.
No, no way. You didn't
and
know
it was no
doing.
Foot. And we sold them. They gave us 8 cents a pound at that time.
Wow.
And we sold them, and we thought after a few months they were going to stop us and say, it was just a joke. We don't use them. There's nothing we can do with them. And after a while, we found out you have to crack them open because you eat the gonad is what you're eating.
Yeah.
And so it's completely different than any other fish where you only have the gonad. And aside from the gonad, they're just a stomach lining and the food they're eating. There's absolutely nothing else in a sea urchin. It's almost like a teenager. They eat, sleep, and reproduce.
Hopefully teenagers are not reproducing. But I mean, okay, so a question for you though. I mean, so back in the 70s, I mean, you didn't even know how to open this thing. You're just diving for them because you're an abalone diver and you're a diver of everything, really. Like, when you first tasted it, how long did it take you to acquire the taste for sea urchin?
Well, it's funny because we started tasting it to find out which was good and which was bad. So we weren't tasting it because we really enjoyed it. We tasted it as a test at the quality. And what we found out, depending on what they eat, the flavors change completely. So, you know, being a fisherman, we taste a lot of stuff in the ocean. That's I'll tell you, sea urchins are a lot tastier than, say, sea cucumbers that I've also tasted.
And you would know.
I would. I shouldn't say that because we're selling some at the market tomorrow. But sea urchin is not really an acquired taste. It's a great taste. Mm-hmm. What Americans don't like is the consistency. Mm-hmm. So they were sold in Japanese sushi bars and so on. And just about 10, 15 years ago, we started marketing it to other restaurants. And the big thing that took off was the pasta. You put sea urchin in pasta, and all of a sudden you lose the consistency, and all you have is the sea urchin covering the spaghetti. So I stopped by on my way out here, and at Juniper and Ivy, they're actually blending the sea urchin roe into the pasta. And you have this beautiful golden color pasta that has the flavor. And so they figured out how to get around the consistency issue, because the flavor is fantastic.
The flavor is fantastic. It's the consistency that is a problem. It looks like a little cat tongue, and it's got the consistency almost of flan, I would say. Yes. You know, it's got a custard-type consistency. Was there a moment when you realized how did things change? Was it just the pasta, or was there a moment you're like, oh my God, we're going to be able to really sell these?
It was very difficult, because all sea urchins were processed and shipped to Japan, and nobody here really knew anything about it. And we were divers, so we were selling it to a processor. And we felt this is never going to be anything lucrative for divers unless we can sell whole sea urchins directly to the market. And we started doing that around 2000, 2005, and that really took off. We gave them away. We gave the sea urchins away. I brought it to my friend Tony D'Amato over at Bocce Restaurant. And he said, nah, Americans don't like this. Sicilians love it. Americans will never eat it. I said, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 10 every week for 5 weeks. At the end of 5 weeks, we'll talk about, you know, does it work, does it not work? At the end of 5 weeks, I went back and said, so Tony, do the people like the sea urchins? He says, I have no idea. He says, my family loves it. I said, let's go to the second step now.
Let's talk money. Let's talk price. And that's when they started having them at Catalina Offshore and places like that and at the markets and things?
No. Catalina Offshore was a processor.
Mm-hmm.
And they sell it, but they sell mostly a processed product because they ship it around the world. And in order to process it, you got to add some stuff to keep it together. And if you sell it whole, there's nothing in there. You crack it open, you eat it. So the difference, I think it's like a tomato. If you buy a tomato from the market, it's beautiful, nice color, you split it open, it's not damp, it's not, whereas if you grow it in your backyard, but you can't ship those tomatoes. You put a pile of them in a truck and they squish apart. So the same thing with sea urchins. These are very delicate, but if we sell them to the restaurants and most of the people we sell them to, they keep it one day or maybe two at the most.
So if you're eating an uni at a restaurant in San Diego, what's the likelihood that you caught it?
The likelihood that I caught it or one or four other guys is 100%.
So there's only four guys.
If it's local. But we had some difficulties. We had a fishery with 30 to 30 divers here in San Diego some 20 years ago. Now we have 5 or 6 left. And it's coming back. You see, the kelp beds disappear with that warm water. And a sea urchin requires kelp beds to feed. So if you don't have a seaweed, you'll still have the sea urchin. It'll be still alive, but there won't be any gonad. There'll be nothing in there. You'll split it open, it'll be nothing there, or a very off-color, off-putting taste.
So you're seeing firsthand the effect of global warming.
You use a term, global warming, and it's the water got warmer here.
Yeah.
What caused it, I don't know. Oh, we had a disease that went through the starfish and then the sea urchins and so on. So you could label the whole thing global warming.
Right.
But we're seeing things that we haven't seen in a while. But I've been diving now for since 70, was that about almost 50 years. And I've seen these cycles go up and down, you know, that the kelp beds disappear during an El Nino.
Mm-hmm.
See, we don't call that global warming.
Gotcha.
That's another
fluctuation.
Yeah. So global warming is like a package. Like terrible things are happening.
Right.
That's all it tells you.
Look, now, we like to believe terrible things are happening, all right? It keeps America going, buddy.
Well, what are the specific things happening, and can you really do something about it as far as management is concerned?
Yeah.
Because the sea urchin diver has been concerned about the management from the very beginning. Even when we were getting millions and millions of pounds, we saw that you had to do certain things at the beginning. So we set seasons, we set size limits, we did all these rules. But the best rule you have is don't pick a sea urchin if it's no good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a law you can make. You know, you can't outlaw stupidity. Otherwise, we'd be really, really in terrible shape.
My part on this podcast would be done.
It's more an ethos that you have to have good fishermen that know
what
they're doing.
Yes, yes. You have to love the idea. And don't forget, if your livelihood and your future all depends on it, you're more likely to take care of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, if you just come in and you harvest a few here and jump in your boat and go to Santa Barbara and so on, you travel around, there isn't that thing that you say, this is ours and we better take care of it. And now my son just got involved in it. He started diving with me. And the little bastard outpicked me two to one, and he's just starting.
All right, so that leads me to my next question. It's actually 3 questions, but I think you can answer them in succession. Sir, what is your age? What is the name of your boat? And tell me, like, your average day of what you do.
I'm 77 years old now. On a typical day, I get up at 5, 6 in the morning, and today we go through our emails and so on, and I do all the other stuff that's needed to keep the fishery alive, to keep the business alive, and then I check the weather, and by that time, my son has called me and says, "What the hell's holding you up? I'm already down on the docks right now. Where are you?" I said, "I'm near the docks. I'm at a Starbucks in East County." But so we go out there, and we dayboat. Over the past 40 years, I've traveled up and down the California coast. I used to go from here to San Clemente Island, to San Pedro. I hit every one of the Channel Islands and headed north, worked out of Bodega Bay. And about 15 years ago, came home. I had a family that was growing up. I had a second family. My first one I never saw, and the second one was growing up. And I said, "Hey, I better hang around the house." So now I dayboat. I go out in the morning, come back in the evening, and that's when we realized you can't make 8 cents a pound and make that work for you. So we decided, hey, we got to start direct marketing these and learn how to. And the price went. It's at $6 a pound now.
For the uni.
For the uni.
Mm-hmm. And talk about the tuna, the dockside market.
You know, well, you gave me an hour and a half to think about it. I made a list of, because how many fishermen will they be there? They're all calling in right now. They're texting me, "We're coming," and so on. And 17 have called in. We have 27 different species tomorrow. All local, all brought in. and some amazing stuff that you'll never see anywhere else. We have eels, we have dogfish, we have anything the guys bring in now, they bring it to the market, because we have such a huge group of people in San Diego. Every ethnic community is represented, mm-hmm. and there's something in there that one of the communities likes. You know, there's a following for sea cucumbers. You know, they keep bugging me, when you're going to get it, when you're going to get it. Well, I'm going to talk to the guy that brings it in, and we'll try to get it. And they call in with the off-the-wall stuff, which you'll never see anywhere else. Plus, you have the tunas, the shrimp, and so on. You have the regular stuff.
So for everyone listening, if you haven't been or don't know about this, there's a dockside market. It's like a seafood farmer's market on Saturday mornings, right? What time are you there?
It's actually a fisherman's market.
Fisherman's market.
And the reason I make that distinction, because it's we have to pass a new law to have a fisherman's market. They only had farmer's markets. And they talked to my son was on a radio show, and he said, you know, the health department said that if you sell carrots, you can sell your fish there. And the guy said, well, that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Okay, I'll go buy some carrots.
I remember that. It was quite a thing for you guys to get. Someone had to just cross out a name on a permit and put in your name or something. They were just do it.
The name Farmer's Market. Okay. With all the, where's your farm located, what crops are you going to grow in May and June, and so on. And we finally showed up, the supervisor got a wind of it, and he said, just go down there to the Department of Health. And I said, I can't fill that damn thing out because they keep giving me the same form. He said, just go down there. And I saw the form, and they had crossed out Farmer's Market and put in Fisherman's Market. Same damn
it's
form.
It's like a pen. They just crossed it out.
Yeah. And they just said, just sign that and give us $300 or something and get out of here.
I love that. That's a one time in American history where the city has done a very sensible job. They're like, you know what?
And it was a funny idea because they had to pass legislation. So we went to Tony Atkins, and he ran legislation to make Fisherman's Market possible. And it went through both houses, and signed by the governor with zero negative votes.
Not one person.
It was it didn't exist, but everybody said, why doesn't it? Well, let's do it. And since then, the funniest is we opened up almost 4 years ago, and much fanfare and so on. 1,300 or 1,400 people showed up, and we had three fishermen. We didn't know what to expect.
Oops.
And they kept looking at the line, and they said, what the hell are we going to do? You know? And they kept coming, and the line kept... But what happened is because of that, that Monday or that Sunday, we got about 40 phone calls. Fishermen want to get involved, so it required this, but then it required us to bring the people back, say, hey, we didn't have much for you, but come on back. And we've been at it 4 years now, and the idea of buying local, fresh seafood is, that's a funny story, because some young kid said, when I buy it from you and it's fresh, it tastes better. But then he stopped. He says, I don't know if my palate is that good, but my brain says it tastes better. So it tastes better. He says, I don't know if I've got such a refined palate, but he says, every time I buy it, I take it home and I love it. And I think it's a story with the fish. If you buy old Pete's uni, you got a story. How the hell did that old bastard still continue?
It's true, though. You walked up to the boat tonight, and I talked to you for 5 minutes about the name of your boat. And, you know, I told you that about the story I had read about you in this. And then you came on the boat, and I talked to Archana and Troy, and I immediately said, oh, my God, he's a neatest guy. He's going to be such a great guest. You can just tell there is something about meeting the person behind it that does. It fills out the story for you and makes you appreciate it.
Well, and that's it goes back to food, period. You know, when you have, like, a friend of a mother of a friend that is making your food or whatever. You know, people always ask me, like, okay, as a restaurant critic, when you go to somebody's house, you know, are you critical? And I'm like, I for whatever reason, that just turns off.
Yeah, right.
Because I know the people that are making it. There's that story, that emotion behind it, you know. And in the same sense about you, Pete, is that, you know, I know the guy who caught it. I shook his hand today. For whatever reason, my uni tastes better today.
Yeah. And if it doesn't, I know where to find the guy. And I want my money back next week.
So if people go down to buy their fish, the fishermen are all there, right? I mean, you're talking to them about it, and
absolutely.
They're there, and their boats are docked there.
We lay out all the fish on ice tables. So you look down at the pier, and there'll be about, tomorrow there'll be 9 tables just filled with all different kind of fish, different color, different sizes, and so on. Just to look at it is amazing. Mm-hmm. The funniest story I keep telling, a guy showed up at the very beginning to buy a tuna, and he was on a bicycle. And we sold him a 20-pound tuna, and we taped it to his bicycle.
Oh my God.
And he rode off on his bicycle. And I told this story to the port commissioners, and one of the commissioners says, yeah, there's a saying that said that a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. Look at the proof. Look at the proof.
Which port commissioner was that? Give me names.
I don't know if he wants to be associated with
that
story. That
would be amazing.
Aaron, stop taking.
His wife would probably get upset.
It says here that you fish 52 weeks a year. Do you still do that?
Excuse me?
You fish 52 weeks a year still? Are you out every week?
Yes, I'm out there. This week I did 3 days only.
So you're in your 70s. You're diving every single day.
Yes.
My God.
Three times a week.
What keeps you young? Are you eating those sea cucumbers? What are you eating?
No. What keeps you young is you keep doing it. You know, and I think people who talk about getting old, it's when they stop doing it. They stop whatever they were doing, they call it retirement. But when you retire, you should go to something else that you enjoy. So I enjoyed it 50 years ago. I still enjoy it. I don't like to repair engines and so on, but I enjoy going out there. I look at the bottom every day and see new things that I find, new ways of looking at it and so on. And as soon as I untie the boat, I'm happy.
So do people follow your boat out to the secret uni spots?
No, they don't follow me. Otherwise, they'd be going out there very late. I've been notoriously leaving the dock at 10:30 or so on, because I only dive about 2 to 3 hours a day, and I come home at 5 o'clock, so I don't need that. I don't need that extra hours. But we work together. The sea urchin divers work together. Don't forget, there's only 5 of us, and we got 20 miles of coastline, or at least 15.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no excuse for jumping on top of one another and so on. And I've been after somehow to collect all that information. We collect all that information and put it somehow so we can work, instead of competitively, we can work collectively. And I think it's a 30-year project, and I don't know if I'm running out of runway now, it looks like.
Well, if we could ever help you with that at the magazine in any way, we would help you. I feel like we could talk to you for 17 hours about all this stuff, and I still have so many questions. How can people find out about the Dockside Market? Is there a website that you want people to go to?
There's a website. Actually, the best way to find out is a Facebook page. We're Tuna Harbor Dockside Market. And just about now, they're putting the list for what's available tomorrow on the Facebook page. And that's how most, we have about 7,000 followers and so on. And that's where you would find out the best way.
So if you guys are listening, we will link to that at San Diego Magazine on the post for this podcast so that you guys can all follow them and check it
Friday afternoon, because they're just coming in. We only have usually from Thursday, Friday that we sell that Saturday. So the guys are coming in yesterday and today, and they were just, as I sat there lonely and musing without a friend, I was finding out who's coming in and so on. And one of them says, I'm just headed in. I'll be in 10 minutes. And I said,
I'm stuck.
Sorry, I'm on a harbor cruise.
You missed
and
it.
I saw 3 frowny faces and a negative no.
I bet you noticed some of the boats when you were out. Did you see any of your buddies or no?
No, I didn't see any.
You were looking out the window. Well, thank you so much. We've been talking to Old Pete. Is that what
Old Pete
you?
Is good enough.
Old Pete, thank you so much for joining us. We'll make sure to link to that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pete.
Thank you. Yeah. All right, you guys, that's it. 101st episode in the books. Thanks again to Hornblower for joining us. Thanks again to Peter Helmay. Check your sandiegomagazine.com for all the details. We're going to post.
I wasn't sure if I was allowed back on this boat, and this will be the last time that I tell everybody that I got fired from Hornblower. I promise you. But I did get fired way back in the day. This is the 10th time I've told our listeners. But I am so glad to be back on this boat. I'm so glad to do 101 episodes with you guys.
Woo-hoo.
To our next 100. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, you guys.